right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, December 1st, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a chilly and overcast 42 degrees here in upstate New York. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show DARPA. Synbio, as in synthetic biology, DNA, CRISPRing, gender, sickle cell, and Gattaca future. We had discussed a lot about CRISPR. We hadn't looked at it in a while. We looked at some of the things that DARPA was working on in the lab and some of these new synthetic biology experiments utilizing X and Y nucleases and inserting them into the standard A, T, C, and G of DNA. And some of the things, they were creating substances that have never been seen before on Earth. Where this is going to lead us, and that would be the Gattaca future. By the way, I found that the whole movie is on YouTube for free. I don't know, some people recorded it on widescreen, so part of it's cut off, so you got to check a couple versions. But I was able to get like 20 minutes in to at least get the gist of the movie. I'm planning on watching the rest of it this weekend. But in the Gattaca future, if you don't get your child genetically edited in vitro before the egg is chosen and the child is born, that puts the child into a segment of society that is an underclass. And that is what we were talking about in one of the stories we read yesterday, whether or not it was going to be a moral obligation in the future for parents to edit their baby's genes to guarantee that they won't have diseases or things of that nature that are taxing on society. Well, we are going to continue looking at some splicing and dicing of biology, flipping switches, turning things on and off today. I came across a couple good things that I'd like to share. One of them was this headline that sort of caught my attention. We've talked about the Chinese being ahead of us in many of these coming disruptive technologies, one of them being CRISPR and genome editing. They had edited the first human embryo before the United States. This is one that came out last month, well, now 2 months ago, October 2nd, 2017. Chinese scientists fix genetic disorder in cloned human embryos. Oh, wait a minute. Not only are we doing genetic tinkering, but we are also creating human clones. What? Well, remember we looked a while ago, China had that clone factory that they had built, and they said it was going to be used for cows and drug dogs, little Fido if you wanted to pay for it, as well as potentially humans in the future. I didn't pull that story up, but you can look that one up. I'll link it in the notes. But that just kind of set me off. So they're creating cloned human embryos that then they are genetically modifying. This is a method for precisely editing genes in human embryos, and it hints at a cure for blood disease. Of course, it's all in the name of curing you. A team in China has taken a new approach to fixing disease genes in human embryos. The researchers created cloned embryos with a genetic mutation for a potentially fatal blood disorder, and then precisely corrected the DNA to show how the condition might be prevented at its earliest stages of development. The report, published September 32 in Protein and Cell, is the latest of a series of experiments to edit genes in human embryos. And this employs an impressive series of innovations, scientists say. Rather than replacing entire sections of genes, the team, led by Jingju Hao at Sun Yat-sen University in Gangzhou, China, tweaked individual DNA letters or bases using a precision gene editing technology developed in the United States. And we actually talked about that technology when the first stories came out. They can literally flip letter sequences from like an A to a G or a C to an A and make them do different things. Wang's team is also the first to edit out the mutation responsible for a recessive disease, one caused by having two faulty copies of a gene, and that would be if both parents had a faulty copy, like in cystic fibrosis. And because it would be difficult for researchers to find dozens of embryos that all have the same rare double mutation, The team worked around this roadblock by developing embryonic clones from their patients' skin cells. Now, this also made me raise an eyebrow. We have read about those pluripotent iPS stem cells that they can make right from human skin, and they can turn the clock all the way back to make them into an embryonic state and then turn them into any type of cell that they want. Well, apparently, they can also turn them into embryonic cells. I thought, and this would be the author of the story, why would they do cloning? And then I read the paper and thought, wow, that is fascinating, says Shukrat Melitibov, a reproductive biology specialist at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, who pioneered human cloning and also works with gene editing in embryos. I would have not have thought to do this, he says. Scientists around the world have now published 8 different studies reporting gene editing in human embryos, 5 in the past 2 months, and none have permitted the embryos to grow beyond 14 days. And the research has had all kinds of different purposes, some to test gene editing technologies, others to edit various disease-related genes, and some to unravel the mechanisms behind early embryonic development. Huang's team led the first report, published April 2015, in which they used CRISPR-Cas9 to snip chromosomes at specific locations, excising DNA and replacing it with other genetic material. But in the latest study, Huang's team used base editing, which is a modification of CRISPR-Cas9, and it guides an enzyme to a specific gene sequence, but it doesn't cut the DNA. Instead, the enzyme is disabled and tethered to another enzyme that can swap out individual DNA base pairs. So far, this technique can be used to convert guanine, which is G, to adenine, which is A, and cytosine, which is C, to thymine, which is T. Hundreds of genetic diseases are caused by single base changes or point mutations, and so editing this sort at an embryonic stage could potentially stave off such conditions. And remember, in the future, once this is all perfected, it'll be your moral obligation to have these genetic changes made to your child. Wang's team chose one mutation common in the Chinese population, and that would be switching an A to a G at a certain spot on the HBB gene, which can lead to thalassemia, a recessive blood disorder associated with severe or fatal anemia. Researchers generally source embryos from even in vitro fertilization clinics, but it is rare for these facilities to have embryos with 2 copies of the same rare mutation. So Huang's team found a person with a blood disorder, extracted their skin cells, used a cloning technique to develop embryos, and made them with the same genetic makeup. The researchers reported that in 8 of 20 of the cloned embryos, they made 20 of them, they were able to convert the errant G back into an A in one or both copies of the gene. The rate is too low for a technique to be considered for clinical use, but the efficiency was high relative to that achieved with other gene editing studies. The repair rate is pretty good and certainly promising, says Gaetan Borgio, a geneticist at the Australian National University in Canberra. Our study opens new avenues for therapy of thalassemia and other inherited diseases. But scientists caution that not all cells of the 8 embryos were fixed. And such embryos are mosaic, meaning that they have a patchwork of cells with different genetic makeups, which is potentially dangerous. It looks like solid work, but it highlights that there is a problem of mosaicism, and it remains a challenge for any form of gene editing in the human embryo. Some scientists also question whether Huang's team looked thoroughly enough for unintended genetic changes. Remember, that's been a problem with CRISPR from the very beginning. They were only looking at some gene switch flips and not all of them. And they discovered when they sequenced the entire cell and then did it again after CRISPR that there were thousands of unintended mutations called off targets, which might have been caused by base editing procedures, although the authors reported that there were none found. But, you know, who knows if they looked in the right place. Huang says future experiments will be more comprehensive, and yeah, we'll do our due diligence. But this first study was a successful proof of principle that the base editing technique can be used to correct disease mutation in human embryos. It may be the conventional CRISPR cannot fix embryos when both copies are faulty, although that is not yet clear. But in August, for instance, Malapitov's team reported using CRISPR to repair a gene mutation that can cause a potentially deadly heart disorder, and by using the other healthy copy of the gene as a template. In the future, Huang says he plans to ask for oocytes and sperm from donors who have one mutated copy of the gene, and that would be the egg, or at least the cytoplasm of the egg and the sperm. And so they are unaffected by the condition, but the carriers of the disease and those used to produce the embryos would be. Some of those embryos would have two mutated copies and some one, but Huang wants to edit both types. He's a mad scientist gone mad. And that raises the conscientious idea that gene editing might be used only to prevent severe disease, but also maybe to eliminate the chance of people becoming carriers of the disorder. So if you had one base pair, they could just cut it out or flip the switch so you don't pass that on. Base editing can repair the mutant side and block it from being passed on to the next generation. Well, that's pretty insane. I found something. Uh-oh. Now I don't know where the story is. Oh, here it is. I mentioned this one yesterday, and I found it. This is from May 22nd, 2017, out of New York Times. In quote, they have in quotations, enormous success, unquote. Scientists tie 52 different genes to human intelligence. Now, aren't we excited that they are able to detect which genes give you super types of intelligence? So in the not too distant future, as they are sequencing everybody's genomes as a part of standard healthcare, they'll be able to determine who is superior breeding stock and who is not. In a significant advance in the study of mental ability, a team of European and American scientists announced that they had identified 52 genes linked to intelligence in the nearly 80,000 people in the study. These genes do not determine intelligence, however, their combined influence is minuscule, and it suggests that thousands more are likely to be involved and still await discovery. But just as important, the intelligence that is profoundly shaped is by our environment. Still, the findings can make it possible to begin new experiments into the biological basis of reasoning and problem solving, and they could help researchers determine which interventions, and remember, they're talking about intervening in a lot of different things and a lot of different areas of our lives, will be most effective for children struggling to learn. This represents an enormous success. And for over a century, psychologists have studied intelligence by asking people questions. Their exams have evolved into batteries of tests, each probing a different mental ability, such as verbal reasoning or memorization. In a typical test, the tasks might include imaging an object, rotating, picking out a shape to complete a figure, and then pressing a button as fast as possible whenever asked for a particular type of word that would appear. Each test taker gets a varying score for different abilities, but overall, these test scores tend to hang together, and people who score low in one measure tend to score low on the others, and vice versa. Psychologists sometimes refer to this similarity as general intelligence. Now, why would they be studying general intelligence in humans? Well, good question. And remember, they are using the human brain to model to create super artificial general intelligence. That's why this brain initiative is so huge. It is still not clear what in the brain accounts for intelligence, but don't worry about it. We got a good headline out of it. And neuroscientists have compared the brains of people with high and low test scores for clues, and they have found a few. Brain size explains a small part of the variation. For example, although there are plenty of people with small brains who score higher than others with bigger brains, other studies hint that intelligence is something to do with how efficiently a brain can send signals from one region to another, and I would tend to agree with that. Daniela Postuma, a geneticist at Vrije University in Amsterdam and a senior author on a new paper, became first interested in the study of intelligence in the late 1990s. I have always been intrigued in how it works, she says, and it is a matter of connections in the brain, or is it neurotransmitters that aren't sufficient? Dr. Pastuma wanted to find genes that influence intelligence, and she started by studying identical twins who share the same DNA. Identical twins tend to have a more similar intelligence test score than fraternal twins that she and her colleagues had found. Hundreds of other studies have come to the same conclusion, showing a clear genetic influence on intelligence, but that doesn't mean that intelligence is determined by genes alone. Our environment exerts its own effects, some of which scientists understand well. Lead in drinking water, for instance, can drag down test scores, and places where food doesn't contain iodine, giving supplements to children can raise their scores. Advances in DNA sequencing technology has raised the possibility that researchers could find individual genes underlying differences in intelligence scores, but some candidates were identified in small populations, but their effects did not appear in studies on larger groups. So I don't know. Do you want to keep going on this? Dr. Pastuma and other experts decided to merge data from 13 earlier studies, forming a vast database of genetic markers and intelligence test scores. And after so many years of frustration, Dr. Pastuma was pessimistic it would work. She thought, of course, we're not going to find anything, but she was wrong. To her surprise, 52 genes emerged with firm links to intelligence. A dozen had turned up in earlier studies, but 40 were entirely new. All of these genes together account for a small percentage of the variation in test scores. It means that we still have a long way to go, and it's going to be a lot harder to find other genes that are going to be important. It's just like astronomy, and we are getting bigger and better telescopes. And in the new study, Dr. Pastuma and her colleagues limited their research to people of European descent because that raised the odds of finding some common genetic variants linked to intelligence. But other gene studies have shown that variants in one population can fail to predict what people are like in other populations. So now we're going to have to do a big global study. That's what they want. More data, the better. And we cannot do it overnight, but there is something that I hope to be able to do in the future. She and her colleagues might coax them to develop into neurons. This would be some of these experiments that they are doing in the lab, which then could be grown into mini brains. Ding, ding. Clusters of neurons that exchange signals in the laboratory. We've talked about mini brain balls before. Researchers could then see if their genetic differences that make them behave differently. So little mini brain balls are going to be used in the lab to help determine what makes someone smart and what makes someone not. Well, talking about smarty pants, we started talking about him yesterday. Hosea Zehner, who is the biohacker who is rebuilding us all from his garage. Remember, he was putting together little CRISPR kits. He used to work for NASA. And he was working on projects to help terraform Mars, but now he is offering DIY CRISPR kits for you to try things at home. I told you that I had a couple other stories, and I found them. I posted them on the wrong page. Genetic engineering yourself sounds like a horrible idea, but this guy is doing it anyway. And this is out of Gizmodo, November 30th, 2017. And this is about the very same smarty pants. Hosea Zehner took a swig from his beer and squinted into the spotlight. He was already kind of drunk. Well, that's good. He's getting ready to inject himself again. He also hadn't bothered to write a speech. Tattooed and heavily pierced with a shock of blue-gray hair, he shuffled around uneasily on the stage. But 150-odd people had flown in from around the U.S. to hear him speak. He's the mad pirate king of biotech. If something goes wrong, I just can't chop off that part of skin, he says. It all is coming from my heart, he says, choking up a little. And everything you're going to hear today is me to the core. Zehner's audience sat in the fashionably decaying ballroom of an old garage of a collector's social club in Oakland. They come from universities, startups, and do-it-yourself garage biolabs, united, if not by a love of citizen science, but then by curiosity as to what is exactly that Zehner is up to. A computer nerd turned NASA scientist turned establishment science cynic, Zehner is something like the self-appointed leader of a small but burgeoning biohacking movement. We've discussed the issues with biohacking before. He presides over a loose coterie of professional and self-taught scientists who believe that groundbreaking science does not require a fancy lab or a degree. And that's the type of stuff that should be worrying us. You could be biohacking in mommy's back bedroom. Zahner was about to talk about his attempts to genetically modify his own body, an endeavor that is likely to raise at least a couple of eyebrows, including the U.S. federal government. We're going to talk about that after this. But first, he was going to talk about his soul and the sanctity of science, and the audience listened with rapt attention. This is our world now, the world of the base pair and the amino acid, and the beauty of the protein. He began extolling the dawn of an era defined by synthetic biology and its advancements in understanding the underpinnings of life. He projected the 1986 Hacker Manifesto onto a towering screen behind him, and Zahner frequently draws parallels between early computer hackers and today's DIY biologists. Ding, ding, ding! That is why I cover this stuff, guys, because I was back in those early days, and I saw all that transpire, and I totally, totally see how this is going off the rails. We have people doing this stuff at home. Tools such as genetic engineering are poised to drastically reshape our world and potentially become a future WMD, and he believes that biohackers could be the ones to free them from the ivory tower. Not what we want. He began to read aloud from the manifesto as if delivering a scientific sermon, swaying back and forth, possessed by the weight of the words, and his voice grew closer to a shout with every single line, kind of like mine do when I cover these stories. "We explore and you call us criminals," he reads, quoting the manifesto. "We exist without skin color, without nationality, without religious bias, and you call us criminals. You build atomic bombs, you wage war, you murder, you cheat, you lie to us, and you try to make us believe that it is for our own good, yet we are the criminals." At the time, no one had actually called him a criminal, but months later, a warning issued by the FDA would give his reading more meaning. He turned to the crowd for a dramatic finish. "Yes, I am a criminal," he read, "and my crime is that of curiosity." Applause erupted, and Zahner took another gulp from his beer. I don't know if I'd recommend being up on stage and drinking beer. That was in August, and a few months later, I sat at a workbench in Zahner's nowhere near sterile headquarters and lab in West Oakland as he ripped dead skin cells from his forearm with duct tape in preparation for his experiment. He wanted to genetically modify his body cells by turning them a darker color. Not his whole body, but a small circular patch of skin that would wind up looking like a henna tattoo if it actually worked. His first step would be to assault himself with duct tape. And next, he would spread a DNA plasmid containing an enzyme called tyrosininase over his skin in order to spur his body's production of melanin and, fingers crossed, persuade a small patch of skin on his left forearm to turn a slightly different, darker shade of pasty pale. At least theoretically, the plasmid should sink into his skin, penetrate his skin cells, and cause the cells to begin overexpressing the tyrosinase gene, increasing the amount of skin color-causing melanin that in that one circle-shaped spot. He was riffing off a paper he had read in which scientists used a similar topical gene delivery method to give different genes to mice. The interesting thing is, he says, if it works, will it last? And he had a GoPro strapped to his head as a hell or high water watermelon beer on his table as he filled a pipette with DNA to spread over his skin. "Or will it be like a suntan that will just fade away?" he asks. Zahner, 36, has a PhD in biochemistry and biophysics from the University of Chicago, but a few years ago he decided to quit the scientific establishment and a fellowship at NASA to devote his time to selling inexpensive DIY bio supplies online, seeding the biohacking revolution, one made in a China pipette sale at the time. Hawking's kits for DIY genetic engineering and basic science supplies for both hobbyists and schools, and his company, Odin, pulled in about $500,000 in gross revenue. When the genetic engineering technology CRISPR arrived on the scene in 2012, promising to make genetic engineering simpler, faster, and cheaper, it galvanized an already simmering hobbyist niche of DIY scientists who sought to try their hand at genetically modifying plants, insects, animals, and even humans. And I remember at one point there was an experiment to genetically modify yeast to express a fluorescent protein so you can make yourself fluorescent beer. Zahner grew genetics as the ultimate, views genetics as the ultimate equalizer. He dreams that one day we will be no longer bound by DNA that we were born with, and every person will be free to hack their own genome to augment their intelligence, change their eye color, or even cure the disease that ails them with the same ease as, say, building a Squarespace website. Drag and drop. And that future is still more than a little ways off, but recent years have seen enough scientific progress to make Zahner's dream feel more mildly crazy than full-scale wacko. And this year, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved what it called the first gene therapy is a treatment for childhood leukemia that works by genetically modifying a patient's own blood cells. And in November 2017, last month, in a major feat, researchers genetically altered a man's white cells while they were in his body. In the meantime, Zahner is doing what he can to help future of recreational CRISPRing arrive by experimenting on himself. Now, whoever thought we would see those two words in a sentence together? Recreational CRISPRing? I would have to say this guy is totally off the rails. Each experiment has gotten increasingly bolder, higher risk. Last year, he made headlines for undertaking his own DIY fecal transplant. Oh, my God. We've talked about those as well. And in order to fix stomach and ulcer issues, and to treat his own stomach issue that had been for years giving him hell. At the time, experts said the chance that it would do anything other than make him seriously ill was essentially zero. But I thought we actually saw real experiments on that. But Zahner said he worked. Independent lab sequencing done after the procedure found that the bacterial makeup of his own fecal matter had become more similar to that of his donor, and the state of his movements drastically improved. And if you remember when we covered some of those fecal transplants, we also discovered that there is a direct connect via the vagus nerve from your gut to your brain, and that some of your gut bacteria actually helps produce chemicals in your brain, and when people got fecal transplants, it also modified potentially not only their behavior but also their personalities. So that is an interesting side note there. I don't know if he noticed any of that, but as with most things, and we are going to talk about some living gut bacteria and some of the things they're doing with gut bacteria and CRISPR coming up. But as with most things that Zahner does, his experiment lacked the rigor typical of scientific research. They were not multiple study participants, and there were no control groups or even a perfectly sterile environment. That's what we looked at yesterday, looking at a bunch of professors and scientists coming out contemplating the future of biosecurity and the fact that there really isn't much of any, especially when you have people like Zahner in their garage and selling these kits to anyone who has enough money to buy one. So he doesn't even use a perfectly sterile environment, making it hard to draw any firm conclusions about his experiments or deduce how it might work out long term. But then earlier this year in 2017, he infused his skin cells with a green fluorescent protein from a jellyfish in an attempt to make his skin glow. The experiment failed to successfully turn him into a living nightlight, but skin that was biopsied revealed that at least briefly the protein was replicated within his body, making him in all likelihood the very first human jellyfish hybrid. I saw that they're selling supplements for brain health that include some sort of jellyfish protein. My dad was asking me about them. I'm like, don't do it. That's called a chimera. And the experiment I was there for was to witness, and it was even more extreme. Green fluorescent protein doesn't really interact with anything in your cells. It just goes in there and it fluoresces, he told me. The crazy thing about this one is that it is actually going to modify the metabolism of my cells a little bit, and that is a little bit scary. He held up a vial containing DNA, and he winced. Oh, my God. This literally says on the vial, not for use in humans, he says. and the gene Zahner was about to put into his skin cells sometimes occurs in abundance in dark moles, but that it can become cancerous. He found no association between it and the cancer, but they found it as a marker for cancer, and it is present at the scene of the crime, he says. So this lunatic's going to put it inside of himself. Presence at the scene of the crime was not enough to sway him. I trust the science that's out there, and I think that it'll be mostly okay, he said. But even if his auto-experimentation didn't wind up giving him cancer, he rationalized that it would be possible for a doctor to treat it. He was only applying the DNA topically to a small patch of skin, and he felt likely that the unwanted side effects would be isolated to that same patch of skin. If something goes wrong, he says, I can just chop off that part of skin. We found out that's what veterinary medicine is doing with some of the 3-year rabies vaccines that they found that caused tumors in animals. They used to give the injection in the neck. They no longer do that. They give it in the leg. So if something goes wrong and it creates a cancer, they could just chop the leg off. But really, what we are doing here is not something that has never been done before. It is impossible to predict what could go wrong. Zahner had originally planned to inject himself with a new gene using the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing system, but he decided at the time that that was a little too risky. Once you inject it, then it will start to go into your bloodstream, and that might be a little more dangerous, he says, as he spreads the DNA on his arm and then dried it on his skin using a soldering tool. I thought, if this works and I get cancer, well, I think to myself, well, it was totally worth it to get cancer and to die from it. And he says the answer was no, but apparently he changed his mind 5 months later. I said in the audience of a biotech conference, as Zahner jabbed a needle containing CRISPR, oh my God, and a gene to promote muscle growth into his left forearm. CRISPR was a nascent technology compared with other genome engineering strategies, and the scientific literature has suggested that using it sometimes produces unintended consequences. I kind of have this motto now that if everyone believes something, then I should research the opposite, he explained to me later. And once he told me he had to believe that using CRISPR was too dangerous because it resulted in too many unintended effects. But then he dug into the research, and he said that the data he found persuaded him that potential off-target effects of CRISPRs had been overhyped. How numerous or severe those unintended edits are subject of significant scientific debate. Some scientists share his opinion that fears may still be overstated. But still, injecting yourself with CRISPR when there isn't even any debate about whether it might not give you cancer sounds like a terrible idea. Yeah, but he is not the only one. There are other people out there that are experimenting with biotechnologies on themselves. We talked about a couple of those when Ira Pastor was on. He said he actually knew those two scientists that I had mentioned. The one was the CEO of a company that injected herself with stuff to make herself younger, and the other one was a Russian scientist who had injected himself with 3.5 million-year-old bacteria to see if it would work as a fountain of youth. Well, brand new story. I mentioned this one yesterday, and I couldn't find it when it came time to the show. The FDA is not cool with selling DIY gene therapies. And this was November 22nd, 2017, out of Gizmodo by Kristen V. Brown. The Food and Drug Agency has issued a stern warning to anyone like Zahner who might be crazy enough to undertake gene therapy in the do-it-yourself fashion. Definitely don't do this at home, a statement released on Tuesday implies. And if you do, we will throw every law we can at you. The FDA deterrent comes on the heels of a brazen DIY gene therapy experiment in which a 27-year-old software engineer, and I didn't hear about this one, injected himself with an unimproved gene therapy for HIV designed by 3 biohacker friends. The first injection was streamed live on Facebook in October. What? And it went viral after it was covered by Gizmodo. You can't stop it, and you can't regulate these things, says patient zero, Tristan Roberts. And he said that to Gizmodo at the time. But apparently, the FDA begs to differ. The FDA is aware that gene therapy products intended for self-administration and do-it-yourself kits to produce gene therapies for self-administration are being made available to the public, but the sale of these products is against the law, and the FDA is concerned about safety risks involved. Consumers are cautioned to make sure that any gene therapy they're considering has either been approved by the FDA or is being studied under the appropriate regulatory oversight, it concluded. And it was not the first time that a hacker type has injected themselves with something designed to alter their body genetically. Over the past few years, the advent of simpler genetic engineering technologies and services that allow you to design and order DNA on the internet, they can 3D print DNA, which is pretty crazy, and high resolution, has spurred a burgeoning movement of biohackers that aims to edit the genes of bacteria, plants, animals, and even people outside of fancy labs and without prerequisite degrees. And on a few occasions, the FDA has intervened, such as when the agency questioned whether a green fluorescent jellyfish protein, ding ding, being sold to make glowing beer, and that's the experiment that I remember, might be classified as a color additive for food. And it hasn't been approved by the FDA. Typically, though, the Food and Drug Administration does not choose to intervene when individuals carry out experiments on themselves, though it does typically strongly discourage such self-experimentation. And so would I. The October experiment, though, may have moved the agency to make a statement for a few reasons, and that would be the guy doing it on Facebook to treat himself for HIV. While Roberts actually injected the vaccine himself, its development was paid for by a company called Adcedens Biomedical, which is a mysterious biotech firm with transhumanist leanings. Well, all the more reason not to be injecting yourself with this. The company plans to sell the quote-unquote research compounds used to make the vaccine online and to fund transparent clinical trials beginning next year in places such as where? Ho-ho, South Africa, our favorite open air petri dish, and it would skirt typical regulatory oversight by having people like Roberts deliver their own treatments. Self-experimentation is not against the law, and so the FDA is instead cracking down on selling of the supplies that could enable it, like from Zahner's company. And they haven't mentioned that yet. That's interesting. The experiment also raises concerns because when it involved genes that research has suggested may one day lead to a highly effective HIV vaccine, there have been no human clinical trials of this vaccine to date, and it is unclear from the FDA's statement exactly which laws the selling of the DIY gene therapy supplies may be violating or how the agency will enforce those laws. I bet they're going to get them with some sort of interstate or intercontinental trade laws. Gizmodo reached out to the FDA for comment, but it did not receive a response before publication. The agency singles out CRISPR in particular as a subject of concern, noting that it, quote, considers any use of CRISPR gene editing in humans to be gene therapy. It does not, however, mention that there are other gene editing systems, though the October experiment relied on a different method. Clinical trials or sales of any gene therapy products already requires approval from the FDA, and the clarification here seems to be that the FDA considers any human CRISPR application to be gene therapy. It is also uncertain on how this could impact businesses like the aforementioned Glowing Beer Kit Company, which was the Odin, so it was the same company, which sells biohacking supplies, including those to modify genes. What does seem certain is that the FDA is drawing a battle line and signaling to biohackers, beware. So there you have it. So DIY biohackers, you are now going to get into trouble by the FDA. Now, here was something I ran across the other day as well that I did not know about, but kudos to Canada, at least for now. There is a, what they call, this is digitaljournal.com, an outdated law that makes gene editing using CRISPR illegal in Canada. Well, Canadians are lucky that they will not necessarily be subjected to some of the mad science that we see here. Canada is among the few countries in the world where working with CRISPR gene editing is illegal under the Assisted Human Reproduction Act. Not only is it illegal, but doing so could land you behind bars. CRISPR is a simple yet powerful tool for editing genomes and allows researchers to easily alter DNA sequencing and to modify gene functions. The proteins of the CRISPR system are an enzyme that act like a pair of molecular scissors, and CRISPR and targeted genome editing are opening an era new in molecular biology. The technology has given researchers an efficient and reliable way to make precise, targeted changes to the genome of living things. But remember, this is not the only way that they can do that. We might actually get to some of the other technologies today. And this has been a long-standing goal of biomedical research. Canadian scientists have been left out of the conversation on CRISPR, and that is a real shame, or so says this author. By the end of 2014, over 1,000 research papers have been published that already mention CRISPR. Technology has been used to functionally inactivate genes in human cell lines and cells, and so to study Canadian albicans, which I have no idea what that is, to modify yeast used to make biofuels and to genetically modify crop strains. CRISPR can also be used to change mosquitoes so they cannot transmit diseases such as malaria. And we talked about that. That is using CRISPR in gene drives to be able to spread a genetic change throughout an entire population in one generation that is invested in by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. All right, let's move on a little bit. So we already know what CRISPR is. We already know that DARPA and the Department of Defense has been spending a lot of time not only looking at genome editing, but also at synthetic biology. Well, let's take a look at a newer story. This is from a week or so ago, November 21st, 2017. And this is titled, Sandia Laboratory joins the Gene Editing Safety Project. And we read about this briefly. This is called the Safe Gene Project by DARPA that was going to give them the ability to not only lock down, but to reverse unintentionally or on purpose gene editing. So this is a Control-Alt-Delete. Gene editing is revolutionizing bioscience research landscapes and holds a promise for deleting diseases from human bodies, just like Georgie Porgy Church did in zoonotic diseases in pigs with their xenotransplantation project. Sandia National Laboratories is now working to make this technology safer and to ensure that one day it can be delivered into humans without triggering adverse immune reactions or causing other undesirable side effects. Sandia biochemist Joe Schlinginger explains that gene editing technology is based on a billion-year-old arms race between bacteria and viruses trying to attack them. Bacteria save little bits of viral DNA using CRISPR-Cas9, and the system helps bacteria recognize a virus when it returns for repeat attack. So then this CRISPR system uses this Cas9 enzyme that binds to the offending viral DNA, and then it cuts it and it destroys it. In addition, CRISPR-Cas9 needs a carrier to be delivered into human cells. Typically, this carrier, and we've talked about this before, is a virus linked to the common cold called the adenovirus. And that's how they do it. They infect this adenovirus with CRISPR, and then they get you sick with it, and then the CRISPR goes in into your body, and it gets into your cells. Even on the first use, patients are likely to have an immune reaction. But new approaches are needed to enable the treatment to be successfully used more than once if necessary. To be able to control CRISPR technology and to use it without causing permanent DNA changes, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, created the Safe Genes Program. One effort being funded under Safe Genes is the $2.5 million two-year project led by Jennifer Doudna's laboratory, which I didn't know she was working with DARPA, at the University of California, Berkeley, in partnership with Sandia at the University of California, San Francisco. Doudna is a pioneer in the development of CRISPR, and in the early field, the research is fruitful. DARPA could extend this effort for another 2 years to bring the total to 4 years and $5 million. Viruses are skilled at changing their DNA and generating new anti-CRISPR proteins to block bacterial immune systems. This is the other side of the bacterial virus arms race. These proteins can function as an antidote by allowing gene editors to be turned off if needed. Well, phew, good thing. Safe Genes team is taking advantage of these proteins to develop inhibitors that can control off-target effects of CRISPR. And Schlöinger explains that should dose of a gene editor need to be administered, it could be followed by a dose of a gene editor inhibitor to shut it off, minimizing the amount of time in which the off-target effects could take place. So the Safe Gene Project builds on work ongoing on Sandia, which is also focusing on fighting infectious disease and using gene editing as a remedy. And remember, we had talked about DARPA genetically modifying people for the next pandemic. It was going to be a shape-shifting immune system to help cure you from diseases known or unknown. Normally, the CRISPR system targets DNA, but Sandia has been collaborating with Dowd and his team to create a CRISPR system that targets RNA instead. Attacking virus RNA directly is likely to be more effective against most pathogens of biosafety concern, according to the Sandia virologist Oscar Negredante. CRISPR systems already exist that target RNA, but these systems result in general RNA degradation. This new RNA targeting system can affect specific human or animal RNA, including those known to encode proteins that aid viral infections. Some proteins are known as gateways for invaders, and if you knock out these proteins, their viral coding RNA, the pathogens cannot get into your cells, and you haven't made any permanent changes to your genome. Well, phew, glad that they're looking at how to make it safer to put into humans. Negranti believes that this work is, if successful, will represent a quantum leap forward for virology because this new CRISPR technology would attack illnesses in multiple ways. Currently, vaccines target single strains of a virus. Sandia's Safe Genes Project is working towards solutions that target all strains of a virus, like the universal flu vaccine, as well as find ways to repair infected hosts and human cells. Oh, this is going to be your little CRISPR doctor. It is cumbersome to create new treatments for each and every bug, and it is not feasible for quickly responding to emerging threats such as pandemics. And one treatment for each and every strain that appears, as well as all related viruses, is a much better strategy, he says. It is like a leap from eliminating one letter with a pencil eraser to hitting a Control-Alt-Delete of an entire paragraph. So there you have it, people. All right, so where do we go from here? We have read about living therapeutics before. Again, there was some financing from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that we had read about in an MIT Technology Review article. Where is one out of the PLOS publication, Engineered Probiotics to Act as Living Medicine, January 11th, 2017. Modern medicine has found ways to use a pill of chemicals to improve human health for people around the world. Drugs are taken for infections, cancer treatments, metabolic disorders, and every other ailment. But despite the impact of chemical medicines, there are many problems that need a smarter solution with more targeted benefits. One smarter medicine to keep an eye on in 2017 and beyond is the use of engineered microbes to produce therapeutic and diagnostic signals within the human body. Living medicines designed to respond to cues in the human body can create all kinds of new treatments or diagnostics that would be impossible with traditional drugs. Remember, we read about the smart pill the other day that could tell whether or not you took it for schizophrenia. Well, now we are going to have living diagnostic bacteria that can live inside of your gut. Our ability to reliably engineer microorganisms to do our bidding, such as with synthetic biology, and our knowledge of the importance of balancing vast communities of bacteria in our gut, which would be the human gut microbiome, are both fairly new developments. But beyond just a combination of two buzzwords, synthetic biology applied to our microbes in our gut gives us a new treatment approach that uses a living product instead of a chemical. Synthetic biologists put bits of DNA into cells of an organism so that it does some new job in addition to all of its normal functions to survive. Meanwhile, studies of the human gut microbiome have led to the realization that bacteria may be constantly influencing our health. And while this microbiome knowledge has led to fads in probiotic use, a more powerful application may be using probiotics engineered to address the specific problem for each and every patient. A clear example of an engineered therapeutic was published in 2011 that created E. coli. And we talked about that. Georgie Porgy Church was involved in some heavy-duty E. coli manipulation. But this was an E. coli that could sense and destroy pathogens. And that would be the Pseudomonas aeruginosa. The research from the Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, who put a quorum sensing ability from the P. aeruginosa into E. coli and then connected to the production of a toxic protein called a cycin, a pyosin. So when there is a quorum of P. aeruginosa, the engineered E. coli turned on pyosin production to kill the P. aeruginosa, and they would be creating some sort of drug in your gut. But of course, any living medicine would have concerns about safety. Some synthetic biologists have worked out a kill switch that could eliminate the microbes if something went wrong. Well, phew. And the major factor for safely starting with an organism that is already safe to eat. The typical lab strain of E. coli are not helpful as probiotics, but there is a probiotic strain called E. coli nisil. And by using the bacteria deemed as good in our gut, we can give a boost to the good guys. We read about these guys, Synalogix. In late 2016, startup Synalogix, co-founded by Jim Collin and Tim Liu, who are both from MIT, got the patent for modifying E. coli nisil to treat a urea cycle disorder. The idea here is given E. coli nisil the ability to do a metabolic job that the patient's body might not. This nisil strain can have some beneficial effects, but it must be replenished with repeated doses because it does not colonize the gut. Beyond safety, there are other key factors to decide with which organism to engineer. And that is the organism's ability to survive in part of your gut where it's needed to do your job. Nisil does not set up permanent residence in your gut like some of the other bacteria that we had read about with flagella. So you have to keep replenishing it with new doses. An organism that colonizes your gut would be taken once or infrequently and provide continued benefits. And those are some of the things I worry about. Well, now let's check out this one, because we read about one time about them wanting to use gut bacteria to send back diagnostics. Well, this came out November 27th, 2017, just a few days ago in GenEngNews.com. CRISPR has now been harnessed to turn bacteria into microscopic tape recorders. What? Oh, yes. Scientists have harnessed the bacterial CRISPR-Cas9 immune system to generate miniature living tape recorders that could feasibly be used to diagnose disease, carry out environmental or microbiological sensing, and record changes in a body's organs or systems, such as your gut. Such bacteria swallowed by the patient might be able to record the changes they experience throughout the entire digestive tract, yielding an unprecedented view of previously inaccessible phenomenon, comments Harris Wang, PhD, assistant professor in the Department of Pathology and Cell Biology and Systems Biology at Columbia University Medical Center, who leads this research. Dr. Wang is also the senior author of the group's published paper in Science, which is entitled Multiplex Recording of Cellular Events Over Time on CRISPR Biological Tape. Now, multiplex, remember, is a whole bunch of different signals all being recorded or taken from a single stream. The bacterial CRISPR-Cas9 system exemplifies a naturally occurring biological memory system, the author explains. When the bacterium is infected by a genetic element, such as a phage or a plasmid, the cell's CRISPR system cuts out short fragments from the foreign nucleic acid and integrates that sequence into the genomic CRISPR arrays as a spacer. The CRISPR immunity proteins then recognize and eliminate that same invader if it tries to infect the bacterium for a second time at any point in the future. And importantly, the integration of the foreign DNA occurs unidirectionally, not bidirectionally, which means that the CRISPR locus represents a chronological record of invading viruses that are passed down through bacterial generations. This CRISPR system is also a natural biological memory device, says Wang. from an engineering perspective, that is actually quite nice because it is already a system that has been honed through evolution to be really great at storing information. So we're going to have little biological tape recorders in our gut. Tape recorders convert temporal signals such as analog audio and recordable data written on a tape as it passes through a recorder at a set speed. Researchers aimed at developing a similar biological system, which they call temporal recording, in arrays by CRISPR expansion. So when you think about recording temporally, changing signals with electronics or an audio recording, that is a very powerful technology, but we're thinking about how you can scale this to a living cell themselves. CRISPR has previously been used to record and store poems, books, and even an experimental movie in DNA. But this is the very first time that CRISPR has been used to record cellular activity and the timing of those events. The author reports that engineering the CRISPR-Cas adaption system to directly record biological systems in their temporal context and not simply a sequence of information of the DNA has not been achieved to date, but in this framework, a biological input signal is the first transformation into a change in abundance of a triggered DNA pool within a living cell. The CRISPR acquisition machinery is then employed to record the amount of triggered DNA into CRISPR arrays in a unidirectional manner. Dr. Wang says the team next plans to use this TRACE platform to investigate markers that indicate changes in normal or disease states in the gastrointestinal tract or other bodily systems. Remember, they want to get in, they want to record things, they want to change things, they want to flip switches, they want to diagnose and medicate you at a distance. And this is where this whole Internet of Things, soon to be the Internet of Everything, that will include you, is leading. So I ran across something today out of Singularity Hub talking about flipping switches, and it looks like we are getting close to the end of the show already. We had talked a while ago about the Internet of Things and how a lot of our devices use ultrasound to communicate with each other, to send ads, and to do all kinds of things as well as hacking. Listen to this. How bursts of ultrasound can be used to flip switches in your brain. We've talked about many different technologies used to flip switches in your brain, such as electrical pulses or optogenetics, something which I don't think we're going to get to today. But let's check this out. So this sounds like the beginning of a Stephen King novel. A protagonist bolts up in his bed, and his unsuspecting brain has picked up ultrasound waves crashing in the air. These waves have a power to fry his delicate neural tissue, but instead, they silently spark his neurons into action. Horrified, the man watches as his own arm pulls back the sheets as if controlled by an amorphous puppeteer. Using extrasensory sound waves to alter someone's actions like a classic sci-fi trope. And yet last week, at the Society for Neuroscience Conference in Washington, D.C.,